Okay, it is 10:30. Could everybody please come to order? I should have some jokes for you or something. Yeah. I asked one of the AI models to give me some jokes about Braille. Yeah. Not very. I'm an AI skeptic myself. All right. Thank you very much. The cookies and biscuits were terrific. Thank you. So we will resume with the report of the research committee. Natalie Martiniello. Natalie? Uh-oh, we've lost Zoom. We have to look all over the room. Look under the tables. Look everywhere. Well, what can I... Does anybody know anything about what all these letters behind people's names mean? Anybody from New Zealand who has knowledge about this? Who wants to tell us? Mary, do you know what all these letters mean behind people's names? It's quite magical. Member of the M. It's M. Jonathan's was MNZM. So it's member of the New Zealand something or other. Mafia, maybe.
Okay, everyone. Mary Schneckenberg.
Ah, there's Mary. Ah, tell us about it.
Each country does things differently, okay? So it's not a right or wrong issue. So the letters in New Zealand, because some people more than others are really proud of the awards, we decided to give everyone their letters. For example, in the United Kingdom, there are what they're called Royal Honours, and New Zealand continues with the Royal Honours process. So just a reminder, this is not a commentary about what other countries do. This is just a commentary about what New Zealand does. And there is a criteria how you apply for a Royal Honour. Those criteria, those rules have changed over the years, over the many years. And it's now a lot more transparent, and you can find out who nominated you, even. You can nominate yourself, in fact. So the rules around the Royal Honours are much more respectful of the recipients as well as the process. The process is managed by the government. There is a Royal Honours Committee that determines who gets Royal Honours. They're issued twice a year, so those of you who are in town for the coming weekend, the coming weekend in New Zealand is King's Birthday Weekend. Used to be Queen's Birthday Weekend until Queen Elizabeth passed away. So it's the King's Birthday Weekend in New Zealand now, this weekend. And Monday is the King's Birthday. And the Royal Honours, I think, will be announced this Saturday, the 1st of June. They get published in newspapers, and then actually the most reliable thing is the government website. That's where the list is. That's the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. And then you receive your medal at the Governor General's residence in Auckland or Wellington, and it's a really nice event. So there are grades of honour. How you get which grade is a mystery to me. And the other thing to remember is that if somebody has perhaps got a grade that seems to anyone to be a bit low on the food chain, just because they might have a Queen's Service Medal doesn't mean they won't get more medals. And people get awards for what they've done up till now. And people can get second and even third awards if you look at the list, because people often have already received one award. So you've got a QSM beside Martine's name. I don't think Martine's here right now, but she will be popping in late this afternoon. You have...
What does that mean? What does hers mean?
Martine Abel Williamson.
Yeah, but what Q...
QSM.
QSM, what does it mean?
QSM, Queen's Service Medal.
Service Medal, okay.
Yeah. There are two or three members of the New Zealand Order of Merit. One of them is Jonathan Bosen, who spoke to you yesterday. There are a few others who will be turning up for different reasons. For example, in 2015, several people received MNZMs for their work in 2014 when people went off to Geneva to speak in front of the UN committee, and that was about the Disability Convention. There is an ONZM, an officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit, who is talking to you tomorrow morning, and they are Dr. Jonathan Godfrey, and he has been involved in the convention, Disabled People's Organisation, sorry. And so he's been involved in the Disabled People's Organisation doing a lot of advocacy, and he also went to Geneva in 2022 to stand in front of the committee. And he's actually just come back from Korea, South Korea, where New Zealand has been talking to South Korea about how to engage with disabled groups and what New Zealand has done for the disabled people's organisations and how that is working in being able to talk to government at quite high level about the issues that are occurring. So that's Jonathan. He's got an officer. I don't have a particular role talking to you with a paper at conference, but I've done a few other things, and so mine is a companion of the New Zealand Order of Merit, CNZM. And it's really important to think about, yes, the award gets given to an individual, but in my case, I just happened to be the individual leading the library team in 2007, and the library and production team, accessible formats and so on. So teams generally only have one sort of supervisor, and I won it for my team. In my case, I'm 90% certain the nomination came from my library profession, not from the foundation. I can't prove that because things have changed since then, but that's where I believe my nomination came from. So they come from all over the place, and it's something that people are proud of, not necessarily for themselves, but for the team, the individuals that they have worked with. So hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea. Thank you,
Mary. We had a good time putting the agenda together and gathering up everyone's letters. All right, Zoom has been found and has been captured, and it's back. So, Natalie, would you like to deliver your research committee report, please?
Absolutely. Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Perfect. Hello, everyone, and thank you. For those of you who I have not had the chance to meet, hopefully we will next time. But my name is Natalie Martiniello from Canada, and I've been serving as the chair of the research committee since the last General Assembly 4 years ago. It has been a real honor to work both on the executive and as part of the research committee, which is really where we can share and learn about the exciting things that are happening in the world of Braille research knowledge, some of which is undertaken by our own ICEB members. In your GA package, you will find a complete research report. So I will just highlight some of the kind of overarching points, and I'm happy to talk about any of these things as well. So the research committee was established in 2016. It is charged with monitoring relevant Braille research and also providing a forum for knowledge exchange among ICEB member countries. So while we don't, as a committee, engage or conduct research, it really is a platform for us to remain aware of research that could have an impact on how Braille is taught or learned, produced, how we access Braille across ICEB member countries and beyond as well. We do this through the committee listserv, as well as regular updates in the ICEB newsletter. The research committee members include a representative from each member country. After the GA will contact you just to ensure that this information is still up to date and to see if any changes should be made. We also currently have 16 observers with an interest in Braille research, one of whom has recently expressed an interest in joining, so thank you. If you would like to join the research committee listserv as an observer, you can reach out to us at info@iceb.org, or anyone who you see there in the room can provide that email address to you again. So Braille research can have a real impact on our lives, particularly for those of us who read and use Braille. And that can be a really good thing because we can use research to reinforce policies and practices, to even support initiatives that we're undertaking when it is done well and when it makes sense. For example, research that kind of touches on the lack of Braille access could be used to reinforce the need for things like the Marrakesh Treaty. Other times, it can be a problem if research is based on misconceptions. And a good example of that would be, drawing conclusions on what it's like to use Braille based on studies that only include blindfolded participants. So I mentioned this just because I think in coming together as a committee, we also have an opportunity to kind of think about and reflect on the knowledge that is out there, the research that's being done, and to share perspectives that we bring kind of on the ground as Braille readers, practitioners, transcribers, whatever it is that we are doing, and the extent to which this is reflecting, priorities and needs. And that could really lead to really fun and interesting and important discussions and new questions that could inspire new research as well. And I'm really glad that the new review was mentioned earlier, because I think that's another great example of knowledge that we can share as well. So I'll make note of doing that. So in saying that, you are very welcome to join as an observer, even if you don't actually directly engage in research yourself. The research report highlights some of the articles that have been shared by members since the last General Assembly, though it is by no means an exhaustive list. Some of the topics that have been floating around in recent years, many of you will be very familiar with: developments in Braille technology, including multi-line Braille displays, research on instructional strategies, including for adult Braille learners, how Braille reading is both like and unlike print reading, and what impact that carries for literacy instruction, and studies kind of talking about what we know and don't know about Braille literacy rates. The committee is also a really great platform for sharing information about upcoming conferences. So, one I would like to highlight for those of you who are not already aware is the International Tactile Reading Conference that will take place in June 2025 in Amsterdam, Netherlands. And a second one that you may be interested to know about is the International Society for Low Vision Rehabilitation Research, which takes place every 2 or 3 years. And this will be happening in Florence, Italy, which is always a nice place to visit, in September 2025. So that one is kind of the visual impairment or blindness and low vision research in general, but it's a really great way to highlight some of the Braille work that's happening. Just looking through my report here. So, one project that we've been undertaking relates to updating Wikipedia pages about Braille. And Wikipedia is not a primary source of information, because anyone, of course, could author a Wikipedia page, but it's often one of the first results you'll find if you perform some kind of search related to Braille, if you have a Braille-related question. And a lot of the time, that information could be taken as factual by members of the general public, and it could, in fact, reinforce some of those misconceptions we all know about. And so currently, there are around 5,343 Braille-related articles on Wikipedia, which is a lot. And so far, we have updated the main Braille Wikipedia page. You'll find the link in the research report. The revisions we've made included just updating content about countries that have adopted UEB, corrections to Braille symbols that reflect UEB changes, information about new Braille technologies, including Braille screen input on smartphones, and just, expanding what was written about who Braille readers are to include older learners as well. We hope to look at other articles to determine what the priorities are for updating next and continuing that work. So if this is of interest to you, you can reach out to us. A related project stems from Resolution 3 passed at the last General Assembly. So this resolution essentially aimed to reaffirm the importance of Braille learning resources for blind and low vision adults. And it's really in recognition of the fact that there are few resources for adult Braille learners who, learn differently from children. And so while it's not directly related to research, having access to accurate information about what's out there is really important. So we've created a web page on the ICEB website. I think you should be able to find a link directly to it on the homepage, but I know Judy has mentioned it as well. We have collected all of the resources. We circulated a call for resources to ICEB members, and I'd like to personally thank all of you who have contributed and shared all of these fantastic resources. And we've organized them according to country. This is really a living document, so please do let us know if there are other resources you would like to share. The information that's there now includes information about textbooks for adult Braille learners, practice resources, peer support groups, online resources, curricula designed for adult Braille learners. And we've also included a couple of podcasts that will be of interest to adult Braille learners, which can be really vital because, as it was mentioned earlier, many adults who are learning Braille may be new to the blind, low vision community as well and may not know other Braille readers. So we look forward to kind of hopefully continuing to update that. In conclusion, I would like to thank everyone who has participated on the committee, shared resources, supported these initiatives. In the years ahead, we look forward to continuing to provide a forum for knowledge exchange. There are many priorities in the realm of Braille research and practice, which all of us could talk about for a long time. You know, Braille technology, instruction, and I think also highlighting the continued importance of hard copy Braille as well. I would like to also personally express my gratitude for having served as chair of the committee and as a member of the executive, and we'll be happy to continue doing so should the next incoming executive ask me to do so. I also would like to thank all of our paper speakers at the General Assembly. Thank you so much for all of your wonderful submissions, as well as the papers committee who assisted in reviewing all of the abstracts and papers we received. Thank you for putting up with all of our emails and reminders, and for traveling to share the work that you're doing. And although I can't be there with you, I will be listening and applauding from afar. And please continue to do what you do, because this is how we can have these discussions and think about new ideas. So with that, I thank everyone, and this concludes my report, and I'm happy to speak further about anything. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie. Yes, I neglected to mention Natalie was also the chair of the papers committee, and she and her committee reviewed all the abstracts and communicated with everyone who's submitting a paper. So any comments about the research committee report or questions? Or I just approved another member for the list, Natalie, so you now have another one more.
Excellent.
Anything? The research committee is really important. I mean, some people might think that research is about as boring as Braille codes, but in fact, I mean, Wikipedia is where these AI models are getting their information, a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And if we fix Wikipedia, then that will perpetuate through many, many different things. Stuff lands in places you can't possibly imagine these days. So it's very, very important that we get the message out there that we want the world to know about Braille and that we get it right. And so we're it's one of our resolutions this time, and I think getting the messaging is really critical. Who?
It's
Francis Gentle. Yes, please.
It's Francis Gentle, Australia. I have a question, being new to ICEB. With the nominations list, I noticed that there's some committees that are not on there. We've got code maintenance and public relations. What happens with, the research committee? Is that a kind of a separate process?
Well, the reason why code maintenance is on the nominations is because the code maintenance officer position is an elected position. The committees, like research, are not elected positions. The chair of the research committee is appointed by the executive committee, and the members of the research committee are kind of jointly managed by the chair of the research committee and the various member countries. Each member country is invited to appoint a person for each of those committees.
Thank you.
So that's how the process works. So if you have an interest or know of someone who has an interest in the research committee, Natalie will continue to be chair. She has expressed interest in continuing in that role, and we're delighted to have her. So she just contact Natalie if you have any interest in the research committee.
DeAndrea,
please go ahead.
Okay. Perhaps it might be useful to talk a little bit about voting members versus observers on the various listservs explain to folks.
Good idea. Okay. So in continuing on with what I just said, the committees, including the research committee, have voting members. That's the member that's appointed by their member country. And a little bit, some of this is just a tad murky in our bylaws and so forth. So this is kind of the way it should be, and the way it is. The countries appoint their representatives and they are voting members. But anyone else can be an observer on these committees. And as you've noticed, even in this General Assembly, you know, I'm happy to take comments from observers and questions from observers. We're not running a class system too much here, so that the delegates get to vote and the observers don't. But other than that, observers are welcome to participate. And it's the same with the listservs. So we have a listserv for each committee, jointly managed by the committee chairs and myself. But I thought it was okay to approve Matthew Horspool to join the research committee. I didn't consult with Natalie about that.
Yes, and please do reach out if you are interested to join and even to contribute to the list. You know, it could be a little quiet sometimes because sometimes, you know, research takes a long time to happen. But, you know, as mentioned earlier, there are lots of other really great initiatives happening, perspectives being published, things like that, that are also really important to share. And, you know, even if you have a question about whether there's, you know, something out there about whatever topic is of interest to you, please feel free to write to the research listserv.
Natalie, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I know you're a professor at the University of Montreal, but what are you a professor of?
I'm a professor. We have a vision rehabilitation therapy program. So for those of you, this will be another term that will not be familiar to many of our international friends. But we have a graduate program in blindness rehabilitation, and it's the only one in Canada right now. And we have three kind of streams: low vision, orientation, and mobility. And then the last one is what you can call, I guess, blindness rehabilitation. And those are the professionals who would go on to teach adults, so including Braille, so Braille and technology and other things like that.
Thank you. It's a real honor to have Natalie as part of our ICEB management.
And equally an honor to work with all of you.
All right. Any other questions, comments about the research committee report or anything else?
DeAndrea,
thank you. Yes.
I would certainly encourage, Natalie has done a really lovely job of looking at Wikipedia, and I think you make an excellent point about these AI and large language models that are scraping the internet for content. And I know that there are people who are looking for what are some ways that we can support ICEB, promote Braille, and Natalie's the section of your report, Natalie, where you talk about how many times Braille is mentioned on Wikipedia. I really did not realize it was more than 5,000 places. That is certainly something that I think that work could be shared with many people. Natalie's done a really good job of looking for entries that have not been updated in a long time and are out of date and inaccurate, but that's certainly not something that one person can do alone. So folks who are interested in supporting ICEB, that might be a way to promote Braille and support ICEB. Since, Natalie, I don't think you have time to do all 5,000 entries on your own. So that might be a really good project for a group of people.
Absolutely. I completely agree. We definitely need many volunteers to help with this. And, you know, kind of the first step is to decide what are the most important ones to update. There's a page on UEB, for example. I can't remember whether ICEB has a Wikipedia page.
I don't think so. I think I looked for that. I don't think so, but there's UEB does, and it's not in bad shape.
UEB does.
It's not in bad shape.
Exactly, and some are perfectly fine, you know, and won't need updating or might need very minor updating. But definitely, if you are interested to help in any way, we can put together a little bit of a working group and spread out the work.
There's even a rock group called Braille.
There is.
Yeah, I have an eBay search that every day, every morning, sends me anything it finds on Braille display and Brailleant. And I would say at least once a week I get a result from an old album of this rock group called Braille. Before Braille.
I've seen that.
I mean, there's Braille displays on eBay almost every day, and if you know people who are interested in that, that's easy to do. Okay, well, thank you, Natalie. Thanks very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Let's move on now to we've managed to already cover the other items that were scheduled for this session. But I want to take some time to have a conversation about membership and membership in ICEB member countries. And I've asked Mary to summarize for you what the Constitution says about members. But I also want to tell you that on the ICEB website, near the bottom of the homepage, there's a section called Other Information. And there's something called ICEB brochure. And that ICEB brochure is a general fact sheet about ICEB, what it is, what it does. And it also has a link to a membership application. And we did recently update this membership application, so it actually is in pretty good shape. So if a country is interested in becoming a member, that's the place to start. Or if you're interested in referring a country to... But I guess there's some question about, you know, who's eligible to become a member. And this is what I want Mary to address. So Mary, if you could talk a little bit about what our Constitution has to say about members.
Thank you. Thanks very much. The membership, I haven't got the exact words under my fingers, but membership of ICEB is actually Braille Authority entities that they may not be called Braille Authority, And in fact, there are a number already in the ICEB family that don't have the words Braille Authority in their titles, but they have the duty of care as a subset of the Braille, with a subset of Braille Authority. So we're not worried about the exact name, but really the members are lookalikes of or truly named as Braille authorities and in their countries. There is actually room in a country to have more than one Braille authority, though I hope we don't find ourselves in that situation, but there is room. And there's also room for the for a group of Braille authorities to come together and be collectively represented as a unique Braille authority or a unique member of ICEB. We don't have one of those either, so there's quite a deal of flexibility. The other thing that's really important is that some years ago I wrote a paper for ICEB called Setting Up a Braille Authority. And it was the best attempt I could make at the time to try and say to each country, there isn't a right way. There is the way that works for your country. So for example, you don't have to be government sponsored. But if you get money out of government for your work, well, that's fantastic. What is really important is that you need a constitution, and that constitution is written in such a way that it is a legal document for your country. So that's the most important thing. You need a constitution, and we've talked about a number of things in that setting up Braille authorities. It went round the executive several times. We've talked about a number of things in setting up Braille authorities that allow completely different approaches to how members get onto Braille authorities. For example, New Zealand's a trust and is set up under trust law, and there are appointees. But there are other Braille authorities where members are elected. So there isn't a right way, and my way is not more right than yours. Your way has to work for your country and your legal system. So hopefully you will have a good look at setting up a Braille authority. I know when we finally got it organised, Christo was great. He gave us some really good advice and then thanked us and said, we picked out the bits that were best for South Africa and applied those to South Africa. And there's lots of choice in that setting up a Braille authority. And it's very strong about saying there isn't a right way. There's the way that will work for your country's legal system and your culture and your multiple cultures and your societies. So New Zealand's Trust, for instance, has entities that are consumer organisations, but one of the entities is the Parents of Vision Impaired New Zealand. Now, these are parents of consumers who are not necessarily themselves Braille users. We try really hard to make sure that the trustee actually knows at least grade one Braille, which is what all our trustees have to know. But I'm not sure if there are other Braille authorities that have a parents' organisation represented. Now, there may be, but that's why I mentioned that only to illustrate that that works in New Zealand and may not work somewhere else. So just try and be really free to set up a Braille authority that works in your country and fits with your country's laws. and have a look at setting up a Braille authority. And if you've got any questions, maybe drop us an email, write to the ICEB email address, and one way or another, someone will answer it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Christo, would you like to share a little bit about your experience with Braille authorities in developing countries and what some of the challenges have been?
Thank you. Yes, we've had interest from several neighboring countries. We've had interest from Botswana and Namibia. Had some from Uganda. And also from the Philippines, which is not an African country, but there's been substantial interest from them. There are a number of things. Of course, the one is language, and the ICEB is primarily interested in English. But you know, we have been working with other countries to help them to to adapt their codes, their local language codes, to base them on the principles of the UEB. As we know, Nepal, obviously also not an African country, but our newest member, the problems, the main issue of involvement for many of these countries would be cost, membership fee, and cost of attendance, and so on. Botswana has been a long time interested in ICEB, and they have implemented the UEB. They're using it in Botswana. They have often attended meetings of the South African Braille Authority of SABA. They have expressed an interest in becoming a member of ICEB, but they have not yet. I think the issue there was probably cost. I don't know. I haven't looked at their World Bank rating to see whether they would qualify for free membership. But I think that is probably the main deterrent at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay,
question.
Yes, UK.
A while back we mentioned the ICEB brochure and membership form on the website. Does that now need amending / updating to include the new waiver of fees for developing countries?
It does. I've added Nepal, and we also, because it lists our member countries and so forth, but it needs more explanation, and that's something that's on our near to-do list.
Thank you. And another one, Christo didn't mention, Zimbabwe has also been interested.
Yeah, Zimbabwe, we've had a lot of conversation with, and in Zimbabwe, the issue now, I think, is, you know, who has the authority to declare themselves a Braille authority? And that's, they run into complications in that regard. Because we don't require government approval or anything, I mean, the Braille Authority of North America, you know, back in the 70s, just said, we're the Braille Authority, and we're going to have as our members all the relevant members who would, all the organizations who would care who's the Braille Authority. And we don't have government approval, but we just act like we know what we're doing. And and it, so far, nobody's challenged it. But we have members from the professional organizations, the consumer organizations, our national library system, other just transcribing groups and so forth. So we have quite a broad range. We don't have parents. That's kind of an interesting idea. But we do have a fairly broad range of organizations as members of the Braille Authority of North America. And then Canada has their own slightly different organization. Do you say any more about that, Jen, maybe?
Sure. What have we got here? So Braille Literacy Canada, I will keep this brief, but it came into being in 1990, and it is, at that time too, it was our main stakeholders, well, and they still are, although I would say we have less in the way of parent involvement, but our main stakeholders were Braille readers, Braille transcribers, educators, and parents of blind children. And when we came into being, we were, our name was the Canadian Braille Authority, and then in 2012/2013, we became Braille Literacy Canada, Littératie par Canada, but we are still basically, the organization has changed over the years, but we're just kind of the same under a new name. And we, in 1991, at our first AGM, the membership at the time voted to follow BANA with regard to Braille formatting. And we typically, you know, Braille in Canada versus Braille in the United States, very similar, except that Canada adopted UEB in 2010 and did not choose to continue with Nemeth. So we have sort of UEB, including UEB Technical. And there are a few other differences. And because we have French Braille, because it's an official Braille code in Canada, because we are officially bilingual. So there are a few instances where having a specific Braille authority in Canada is very helpful, not least of which is actually international representation. So it gets a little, you can make your head spin a bit, but BANA, while it's the Braille Authority of North America, on the international stage, it represents the United States, just happens to be chaired by a Canadian right now, just to make things a little more, you know, murky. And then BLC is the Braille Authority for Canada, and we have had certain governments, you know, we've applied for grants, government grants, and gotten them, but we don't necessarily have, just like the U.S., I wouldn't say that we have sort of government endorsement in the same way.
And Canada and the United States have made completely independent UEB decisions.
Yes.
In the way that we adopted UEB, in the way that we implemented UEB, they were totally separate decisions, to the point that every time there was a vote about UEB by BANA, the Canadian members abstained. Sir, Christo?
Thank you. Have I got it? Yeah. The other issue that we had, of course, is that African governments seem to think that only a government can appoint an authority. And if they appoint the authority, they also want to appoint your board. And heaven forbid that government should appoint a board for a Braille authority. When we established SABA in 2012, we had a lot of resistance from government. But we just made our skins thick and pushed on regardless and stopped calling it the South African Braille Authority. We call it SABA, which is a nice Africa-sounding word. Now government recognizes SABA, so that's okay. They talk to us, they recognize us. And I see the guy from Zimbabwe had the same issue there. Their government did not want to let them call themselves an authority. You know? So there's that sort of nonsense around.
Krista has been very helpful in having conversations with some of our folks that have been interested in becoming ICEB members and kind of telling them how they did it and what worked for them. And it's been helpful. Who's that?
Hello, this is, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Ivan from Spain. I'd like to find out
Do you accept individuals also as members in a way?
We do not. We it's not a matter that we don't accept. We have no category for individuals, no mechanism. An individual certainly can be, you know, part of our listservs, can join. That is another, well, we referred to it briefly, but we also have a one-way mailing list ICEB announced where people can join that and continue to be informed about what we're doing, and we have all the other social media and so forth, but not as members.
At least I was thinking, yes, as a member, as an observer with voice no vote, but some kind of promotion. And I was thinking, I am a devotee for Unified English Reign, and I am doing my best on disseminating its code and fundamentals in Spain, even if English is not a second language there. However, that's why I was thinking, may I, in, no, I don't know, there would be a way to say that I could be a non, just kind of an observer member in a way, or there would be some, if people wanted to contribute in some way.
Yes, yes. Well, we would welcome you as a member for many of our lists.
Okay, thank you very much.
DeAndrea,
yes?
Could you say a little bit more about what the associate membership is? Because I'm thinking about this Fran Gentle's comment about 150 different countries that are represented on UEB Online, demonstrating there's a great interest.
Since we don't have any, and I'm not even sure, I'd need to grab a copy of the Constitution to tell you if somebody's got one. As I understand it, isn't that kind of meant for commercial entities? Mary, do you want to say anything about associate members, what they are and what the purpose is? We've never had one.
Associate members are open to organizations that are not Braille authorities or individuals.
Well, there you go. I apologize. I mean, we don't have any. So, yeah, let's have some associate members.
Yep, there is a fee.
Yes.
And we haven't provided for discounted fees for associate members yet. It's $300 US.
Yeah, I think it's really intended for organizations that aren't Braille authorities, such as, you know, HumanWare.
Vendors, yeah.
Yeah, vendors and the commercial company.
Bowden,
speak. Thank you.
One of the problems.
Microphone. What's your number?
Five. Yeah, we're on. One of the things I think which will be needed by the next bylaws committee is to look at what are the benefits of associate membership, because I can't actually see any that aren't open to anybody who isn't an associate member.
I think that there would be a benefit. If I were a consumer and I were considering buying a Braille display, I might be a little more comfortable buying a Braille display from a company that said it was an associate member of ICEB and adhered to all the standards and practices associated with UEB. I might think that gave them some credibility, and it would give me that little more inkling of confidence. But I would think that would be the main thing.
Yeah.
And just to show their love and support of a Braille organization, an organization that's doing its best for Braille.
Yeah, my point is in the bylaws,
right,
that is not at all clear.
True.
It talks about you know, you are allowed to do this, this, that, and the other. But those advantages, those benefits are actually open to every observer in the room without having to pay the $300 fee.
No, every observer in the room can't stand up and, you know, if they're an employee of a company that sells Braille products, they can't stand up and say, we're members of ICEB. They'd have to be an associate member of ICEB to be able to say that. And I mean, they can say, you know, we adhere to ICEB's codes, and maybe they do and maybe they don't. We certainly all know how well some of these vendors of Braille products, how well they do, in fact, adhere to Braille codes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, frankly distressing and appalling.
Yeah.
And I'll say that publicly for the stream and anybody else who wants to hear it.
So,
yeah, hold on just a second, Jen. Okay, James, continue. Yeah.
Could I just say then, I think this possibly needs to be expressed more clearly in the bylaws.
I think you're right, and I also think it needs to be expressed more clearly on our brochure and in our... What I'm thinking of, and I'll get to you in just a second, Jen, what I'd like to do, and what I'd like to have come out of this conversation this morning, is I would like to form an ad hoc committee on membership. And if one of you is interested in sharing that, please come and talk with me. But I'd like to put together a committee of 5 or 6 people who are interested in ICEB membership, promoting it and refining it and cleaning up our language and cleaning up our act and our communication about membership. So I think that's not something we can do and we should do. So, yes. Now, Jen.
This is on this topic. I just wanted to say, from the perspective of, I represent CNIB on BANA, but I used to represent Crawford Technologies, the company I work for, who is an associate member of BANA. And there are similarities in that associate members of BANA, you know, they don't have a vote, and you could ask the same question, like, there are more benefits to being an associate member, but one of the big things for my company, why they were willing to and continue to invest in it, is that it really does lend credibility in our industry for when we are meeting with clients to say, you know what, we are an associate member of BANA. Even the fact that I don't represent Crawford Tech anymore, but that they can say my role, and to the extent that I don't have to have the same email signature as everyone else in my company because my signature includes my BANA and ICEB roles, and our company president felt that was important enough that he wants it in my email signature. So I just say that to kind of support that the credibility piece of all of this. It might sound fluffy, but for some companies, it actually is a very real benefit.
Yes, Paul. Yeah.
Hello. Ah, thanks. Yep. As this came up briefly at the bylaws committee meetings that I was part of, and I think largely through some correspondence of yours, James, and I think it's true, actually, the bylaws themselves are pretty unclear about what associate membership is. And I think the credibility argument is probably the only one for joining. But I do wonder if it's something, and I'd be happy to be involved, I'm not chairing it, but happy to be involved in some meetings to discuss it, because I do think that around associate membership, there probably are some things that could be put in there. Also looking at, is the associate membership fee, you know, the same as the membership fee? Because it does seem to me a wee bit like that associate members have been thought about largely as commercial companies as a way maybe of getting some money in. And that's fine, if that's what we decide. But it does seem unclear to me, and the bylaws are really silent about associate membership and what the issues are. And I guess, finishing on this, that if we want associate members, then given that you've never had any, then we probably need to do some communication for possible associate members and promote what the benefits are, because that certainly isn't clear from the bylaws.
I agree. I mean, why isn't HumanWare, you know, knocking on our door saying we would like to become an associate member?
Yeah.
You know, they haven't, but they. Sorry. Rory, thank you. Yes. Okay, microphone. You know, I'm going to revise this protocol. You can say Rory and then your number. What's your microphone number? Two. Okay, so Rory, two.
Is it on?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I think you have to be really careful about promoting ICEB and saying, okay, these commercial people. I mean, the very people that you just talked about who have horrible braille displays could pay their $300 and then say, we are ICEB members, and all those people who are unknowing would say, I'll buy that one because they're ICEB members. I think if you're going to have a reason for these people to join and have, there needs to be criteria that they do need to meet, and that they, so that when they say they're ICEB, it means something, and they can't just pay their money and then get the benefit of being an ICEB member.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I mean, how much would HumanWare's devices have to be compliant with UEB for us to agree to let them be an associate member? I mean, that's a very good point, and that's a tricky one, because it's a two-way street. You know, do they become members and then we make them comply, or do they comply to become a member?
Natalie on Zoom.
Okay, perfect. Perhaps not well timed, because it doesn't actually respond directly to what you just said, Judy.
Okay.
We've been talking about membership and kind of how to also encourage others to get more involved in, you know, different ICEB initiatives. And I think part of that is also continually thinking about building capacity for the future. And I just wanted to share a perspective about something that I've been doing, that I'm sure I'm not the only one doing this. But I actually talk about all of the Braille authorities and ICEB in the Braille course I teach to future blindness rehab people, professionals. And I have them go to those websites and find resources and then talk about how what they found will help them as future practitioners, and why it's so important to have ICEB and to have Braille authorities. And my secret hope is that this will also lead them to become involved in future with their authorities and with ICEB, and to just remain aware and up to date. But even if they, you know, it's so important for them to know that we exist and what we do. But I think, you know, this is probably something that others are doing as well, but I just wanted to highlight that this is something I've been doing and that students have found really, really valuable as well.
Would you be willing to ask them, and what did you expect to find that wasn't there, and then pass that along to us?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That would be really useful to get the perspective of someone who's just getting into the field and looks at it, and, you know, everybody comes with expectations, and they may have expectations of what they think should be there that they're not finding, and I'd really like to know that. Debbie, thank you. Debbie?
Thank you, Madam President. This works several ways. I think Tamara brought up a good point about How does an associate member just join and that's the end of it? Judy asked the question after that about, do they comply after they join? No, I think that ICEB needs to have a set of criteria and the companies need to demonstrate that they meet it. And then maybe ICEB issues them a certificate that they can put on. It's a reciprocal thing. As far as what does ICEB get out of it, exposure when people come and visit them, or they can, companies are going to market themselves any way they can. And if they can market ICEB to do this, this is awesome. And they'll show it in their signature, they'll whatever. But the other advantage for ICEB is that we've always wondered, how do we connect more with Braille manufacturers? We know what we need. James and has waxed eloquently about this many times. And we need, you know, things like LibBlue, the connections we make, it's just another place to make connections with others, like, you know, other blindness agencies like APH, which we have connections with. But you think about the development of the Monarch, for example, and all of the groups and the IBRF, the EBRF. Think of the groups that have connected over these projects. Look at the NLS Braille Reader. You know, these are things that because of technology today that we could do that we couldn't do 7 or 8 years ago. Because of Zoom, in a way, the Zoom has helped us a lot. But, you know, there's the group here has people that they, you know, there's educators that could show it to their students in that room. There are companies that have clients that are looking for specific products. They may not sell them, but they might know who can help them get a sale or help others. There's so many reciprocal arrangements here that if we do explore the associate membership thing, and before that's happened, I think criteria need to be set. I've waxed too long, I think. So I tend to philosophize a lot. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Thank you. I appreciate your comments. And you're right. I think that, you know, perversely, even if we had criteria, they might want to join, you know, just to say they meet them. Years ago, and it was a long time ago, Banna had conversations about, do you remember FM or Jennifer? It was a lot, 20 years ago, about being having a good housekeeping seal of approval kind of thing. We never pursued it. Why not? Hang on. Thanks. FM or Jennifer, can either of you comment on why we didn't ever end up going down that road?
This is FM and Jennifer and Marinella or whatever can add what they remember. What I recall is just the difficulty of, you know, how to set the criteria and then how deeply to go into the weeds with this. And did we have the person power to do it, the time to do it, that kind of thing? Because even in ICEB, remember years ago we had a discussion about whether there would be some sort of criteria for transcribers or all that. And there were so many differences between countries and so many differences between manufacturers and the way people did things. It's really, it can be tricky. So, because on how deeply you go to look at the criteria.
And it's a moving target too. Okay, Jody.
Yeah, I just wonder.
Microphone.
It's number 6.
Got it.
Go ahead.
Just a comment. I wonder for organisations who meet our criteria and who are granted associate membership, whether ICEB would then need to monitor compliance, you know, that's been maintained, and especially as updates occur.
Yes, I mean, that all of that is the complexity that we would be getting into. Hanif? Thank you. Hanif?
Thank you. Yes, just maybe a little observation. I was flying with a certain airline, and I read a document that was given to me very eagerly, but it was quite confusing. So I just made like I read the whole document, but they definitely did not comply. And I did bring it up with them, and they were rather interested, but they said there's no Braille authority of the high seas, you know, and that's fair comment. But that would be beneficial to actually involve ourselves with multinational carriers. It's quite a big carrier, and they were really eager in fulfilling my needs as a Braille reader, and I was quite taken with that. So this definitely has a place, especially with sponsorship and more visibility as well. If we can have the name to say certified by, you know, ISEB on such a document, that's good publicity for us.
Yes, thank you. It is. And all of this is wonderful and needs to be fed to our new membership committee. This is exactly the kind of conversations that I'd like them to have, and I'd like them to come up with some recommendations. Debbie.
I'd like to take a crack at FM's question about where do we start and how much. One of the things, and it goes with the territory, guys, but one of the things we do, we don't try to solve it all at once. Start with what you know, even if it's a small thing, what you can do. But don't try and sort out all of the complexities at the beginning, because it's going to, I do it too all the time, but it's going to kill you. So you got to have it so that you start with something, you know, even if it's 4 or 5 criteria, and this about monitoring it, everybody in that room, there's so many blind people there that use devices. You're your own best monitors, guys. And you know, you're using so many devices, and I'll bet you the technology on that table is just incredible right now. And you know what works and you know what doesn't. And I think you just make about 5 or 6 criteria, and you like it, you make a limit and say, no, this won't work. As far as monitoring it, if you check it every 3 to 5 years, I think you're good. I don't think you have to go out every year and scan all your associate members. And even though I like doing it that way, it's a detail thing. I think really that you need to just start it first and then refine it as you go.
I think one criteria might work. You know, we use accurate, up-to-date UEB, and then let the users monitor it. You know, users can tell us if they aren't complying.
Golden.
They'll do that anyway. Golden, yes.
Sorry, I there was a pause. I thought.
Yep, no, it's fine.
I think we're 4. Oh, there we
4.
Are. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I wanted to... I just wanted to say, and before I do, I wanted to, for the monitoring component, I think that's very true, and between all of us, we've got a variety, and there's different ways of doing it. I think we have to be careful, though, because if we are not actively commenting on something, it could be seen as endorsement if we're not, you know, and we know that it, you know, obviously we have to start somewhere. The comment that I actually wanted to make, and I was sort of hesitating about making this because it's, I don't know, well, whatever, I'm just going to do it. You can fire me. is I have a concern about individual membership, and I know that we're talking mainly about associate here, but because we do have a provision for that, and I believe in 2016 that I raised a concern where that it would at least go through the country's Braille authority, and I don't want to, and this is not, I don't have anybody, you know, this is not a reflection on anybody here or anything like that, but the tone of an organization that's made up of people who represent their organization is very different from a tone of an organization of individuals. And that's not a one's good and one's bad, but it's a very different dynamic. Like if I'm sitting here as Jen Golden, the resources I can bring to bear may be significantly different than what I can do when I have an organization or a Braille authority behind me. And so I understand that we're not suggesting changing the entire model of ICEB so that we're not representing Braille authority. But I think that before, I just think that this new membership committee, which I think is a great idea, needs to really think through the ramifications of individual membership, because I think there's things that would need a lot of consideration and things that just...
Yeah, I think there are individuals who just want to be supportive and show their love, and that's great too. And we might want to have a mechanism for that. I agree. Let's let the membership committee.
Yeah, it needs
to be
thought.
Thought through.
Thought
yeah.
through. Yeah, yeah, that's all I really wanted to say.
I agree.
Thanks.
McLennan,
go ahead.
Two.
I don't want to be Debbie Downer. Not. I don't mean that Debbie Gillespie. that was a Saturday Night Live reference. But I think we have to look at this more globally than just how we enlist members, whether they're individual or whether they're associations or vendors. And I think it's like any kind of licensure or any kind of accreditation program, not only do we have to look at the criteria for entry, but what are going to be our monitoring standards? What is going to be our monitoring mechanism? What is going to be the mechanism by which we evaluate should one, say a vendor is purchased by another vendor? I think it's a lot more complicated than we may recognize initially. And I would just entreat the membership committee to really look at the global process before we enter any of those.
Good point. Yeah, I think this is why Bannon never went down this road.
It's exactly right.
Although we talked about it a lot. Yeah. Bowden first.
So we're talking five. We talked about technology manufacturers and whether they use accurate and up-to-date Braille. You could level exactly the same question at Braille transcription organizations who are already members of the Braille Authority.
Good point. I mean, we all strive for perfection, but few of us ever achieve it. Yeah, good point. Niels?
Good morning to everybody. Just when we think of membership and associate membership, one must think first, does that country have a Braille authority? Because I think we create a loophole here that we cannot take membership as associate members of ICEP if the country has their own Braille authority. That's my first point that I want to raise, is that we mustn't open our backsides for hiding if we have a Braille authority. And some people want to avoid belonging to the Braille Authority, not, and then directly come to ICEP and said, I want to be an associate member as an individual or as an organization as well. That's only my point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good point. Thank you. Yes. Christo 3.
Thank you. We've had vendors being members of our Braille Authority. Now, I've had a bit of an issue about that because they push their agenda and they influence the authority. For certain school subjects, you will always need hard copy Braille. And our government seems to be of the opinion that you do not need hard copy Braille anymore, and they provide the refreshable Braille displays to schools. And one of the vendors in particular that we had on the Braille Authority was pushing these quite seriously and was using that as a lever to influence the Braille Authority to try and move away from hard copy Braille. So that is a bit of an issue, I believe. Yeah. Thank you.
Good point, yes. Yeah.
Hello.
Who's calling for the floor?
Gino.
Okay. Hi, just building on from some of the discussions earlier, I'm just wondering, as neither of the other small Pacific Island states are associated with any Braille authorities, if there is going to be a criteria for associate membership, what could be the best option for them? And I think my second question is relating to the Braille transcribers. Is there such a guiding, UEB guiding framework to support Braille transcribers? Thank you.
I think I'll let Matthew take the second part of that question.
Yeah, I think you should.
Do you have anything?
Well, I'll take the first part. The first part being, this whole issue of criteria and associate members is one that is just coming up in this discussion. And, we will be forming a membership committee, and the membership committee will take a very, very hard look at this. We right now do have in our constitution a mechanism for associate members that does not associated with any criteria. So if somebody wants to apply to be an associate member, they can do it. They can do it now. Get in before the criteria get, I don't know. Anyway, it's all a work in progress. Yes, Matthew.
Sure.
Go.
Thank you. Could you just repeat this? Sorry, just repeat the second part of that question, I'm sorry, about guidance for UEB.
A framework for transcribing groups to know how to do UEB.
Sorry. A framework for transcribing groups.
Yeah, a guiding, is there a manual, UEB manual for transcribers?
Yeah, okay. So the definitive source of rules of Unified English Braille is in fact called the Rules of Unified English Braille. That is available from the ICEB website as a PDF file and as a BRF file. You have to know Braille, I think, really, in order to make the most of that. You wouldn't want to be a brand new transcriber and your first introduction to transcribing be the Rules of Unified English Braille unless you already knew Braille. It's a reference book. It's not a teaching manual. There are several teaching site resources available. In the US, they have the most fantastic certification program through the Library of Congress. Absolutely marvelous. I wish every country had it. It's utterly brilliant. In New Zealand and Australia, they have the Trans-Tasman certificate, which is also fantastic. I think probably some of the resources for those are free. Certainly if you go to the NFB website in the US, you can access all of their transcriber training materials. And if you wanted a more sort of general introduction to UEB itself, websites like uebonline.org, which Francis Gentle and Josie Howes will present on this afternoon, they are another excellent resource.
Hang on, I've got to get him a mic.
What's your number?
Did you get called, Bill? Do you have him?
What about Francis?
Bill, yes. I've got three people at the back who've been wanting the mic ahead of Bill. Is that an issue?
Well, I haven't heard their names.
Bill Jolly.
Okay, I've heard Bill Jolly's name. Bill can speak now, okay.
Thank
then
you.
We'll get to the three people.
Right. I'd just like to make a couple of comments from the last question. The Australian Unified English Braille Primer is a very good book for transcribers to learn the code, and then and also is UEB Online, which we've said. It would be quite easy for Australia to give some support and advice to Samoa, and we can talk about that later. The second point I want to make is I was listening with interest to the discussion about associate membership, and it took me back in time, back many years when we had the same discussion and probably reached the same conclusion, which can be summarised as, in a sense, it's all too hard. But we do have that very loose provision of associate membership where it's one of the real main reasons for having it is so that countries can join that don't have a Braille authority. And the point about that is, well, you can't really give them a vote at the General Assembly if they don't have a Braille authority, so that opinion is not just simply personal opinion, it's backed up by the country. So that's why there is that associate membership category. That's really what it came about for. And so we should encourage countries to use that, and not. I think it's not very productive to be worrying about trying to get the manufacturers involved, software manufacturers, equipment manufacturers, etc. Let's just try and focus with them on lifting that rate of quality that Judy made reference to earlier, that there's a number that aren't really compliant. That's probably the more important thing. And if we're talking about membership, we should perhaps look at the formal membership, the full membership, looking at whether the fees that have sat there for nearly 30 years unchanged at $500, whereas the value of money is halved in that time, that fee should be increased to give the organisation more flexibility. And I would expect that most countries would be able to afford the increase, although there'd be moans and groans, as there always is when fees are increased. And there is provision, there's a hardship provision there to support that. But I think that would be worth looking at, as is looking at some more effort to get other countries to be involved as full members. I think that's an important priority.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, we have some observers that want to speak.
Barry,
okay.
Thank you, Bill, for those comments. You may be aware that we have amended the Constitution and bylaws. Well, the Constitution has had provision to waive membership, but we've tidied the bylaws up and strengthened them to understand what that looks like. But the point that I wanted to make, it's absolutely true that Australia does have resources to help the Pacific countries. And a commentary that we had last week, even in Perth, was the potential for the round table to actually reach out to Pacific countries, because the round table at the moment is Australia and New Zealand. But there's nothing to prevent the round table from thinking about how it might reach out to other countries. So that's just something to think about as being different options. But you're right about the Australian Primer. We have our own Primer. The difference between Australia and New Zealand is actually format guidelines, but I wouldn't let that worry you. The most important thing is to get the transcribers up to speed with the code. And the other issue about New Zealand is that we think carefully about Te Reo Māori and use a different Macron from the UEB Macron. So Samoa needs to think carefully, as you've already started to do, about any particular things that you have to take into account when you are transcribing Samoan. And New Zealand has to worry about this too, because the biggest Pacific language spoken in New Zealand is Samoan. So we need to be respectful and think about this. This is not about us competing with Australia. It's about us trying to think about how can we help, who can provide assistance to not just Samoa, but Tonga and the Cook Islands and all the other Pacific, small South Pacific countries where there are blind people.
Thank you.
You have to say your name.
Francis Gentle.
Francis, okay.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, because it's all feeding into what I had to say. I had just wanted to return to James Bowden's initial comment. I know for the UEB Online users, there are many organisations of persons with disabilities, parent organisations, and they do not have the funds to pay that $300 annually. They can hardly pay the $50 Aussie we charge for the certificates. And I just wanted to ask if the membership group could look at that, and also if, as Judy pointed out, if associate members have to comply with the standards and expectations of ISEB, to have that really clearly stated, because I think, you know, if you're a fledgling group that's discovered UEB, you're not ready to jump into full membership, but you really need to know what the criteria are and be able to afford the cost of joining. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we've certainly just revised the cost for full membership, so I think one of the major activities for the membership committee will be to look at, should we be doing the same for associate members?
Me?
Someone else?
Ivan, please.
Yes?
This is a very interesting really debate, and I was thinking, talking about associate membership, for example, if it would be considered like some situations like I was describing before, like if in my country I was trained to show what is exactly UEB, how it develops, and what is the benefit, if we could use it for transcribing English into Spanish Braille, like BRA, which is very alike to computer Braille to endorse. I was thinking may would be considered to strengthen the individual possibility to show my commitment in a way the house always is built starting from the fundings and its foundation. So in a way I would be raising this question, could it be considered to allow people individually to help promotion of the UEB spreading and giving me or anyone who might be interested in promote this code, especially in non-English speaking countries. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We'll certainly think about it. Thank you. All right, it's noon, and I told you we won't stop late. We won't start early. I'm going to stop. Thank you. This has been a great conversation, and I'm glad we've had the time to really take an issue and have a lot of thoughts and opinions expressed. So it's really been helpful. All right. Yes.
Thanks, Miles. Two quick things. The transport for what am I doing? Sorry. The museum, I'm going to read out the names just in case I've forgotten anyone, and apologies if I pronounce anything wrong. So at the moment I have Lena Coleman, Paul Brown, Ivan, Leona Holloway, Frances Murray, and Steve D'Andrea, Ari, Tino, Hillier. There's someone, Lindsay, and I've got a question mark, Emily and Tamara Rory, James Bowden, Chantal Griffiths, Matthew Horspool, Josie Howells, Francis Gentle, and David and Isaac, Jennifer Dunham, Jen Golden, Daphne Hitchcock. That's a total of 22 thus far. So if anyone else wants to come, let me know by the end of lunch today, please. And to move on to the lunch and afternoon tea menus. So the packed lunches are down the back by the tea and coffee. The main item is balsamic vinegar marinated vegetable wrap.
Sorry.
With spiced hummus and rocket leaves, V and DF. And obviously the people who have got special dietary, their meals will be separate. The snack option is fruit and nut mix, V. The sweet item is vanilla cupcake and the whole fresh fruit and the bottled water and juice. The afternoon tea this afternoon will be crumb chicken schnitzel with lemon dip. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. That's lovely. Okay.